Hello, and welcome to our first Forgotten Fantasy podcast.
Yay!
Yeah. And I'm Bronwyn from Gamers Illogical. You know me as B. And this is my co-host, JG Mitchell.
And I am Forgotten Fantasy.
Yes, from the Forgotten Fantasy e-zine. Today we're going to be listening to a story called Northern Fairies, and it's based on a true story. Jane, would you like to tell us a little bit about the story and what inspired you to write it?
Yeah, I think you will like this story because this is actually based on when your dad and I were first married, and he was a park naturalist in a park up in Northern Ontario. It was fired over. There was no pines, as much as everybody in Northern Ontario loves pine. It was aspen and birch, and it seemed to have some shining things in the woods. So that's where the story is based.
Sounds beautiful.
Okay. Northern Fairies. The northern lights ghost danced orange, red, and blue above the birch and aspen. An owl hooted. In the early summer of 1974, Kate and her new husband, Mike, the provincial park naturalist, got out of the car and stretched, stiff from the long ride to Golud Mossisake Park in Northern Ontario. A truck roared up and stopped. Its headlights beamed into the carport of the small residence and office. The truck door slammed. Kate squinted at the black figure swaying in front of the lights. A ranger stepped forward. He had a florid face with graying Elvis sideburns. Sweat stained the underarms of his short-sleeved khaki shirt. The man reeked of beer. "See, you're finally back. No one stays in the house," he said. "Head office told me it's the married quarters." Mike's voice was hard. "They think it helps protect the park to have someone living near the entrance." "Stupid ministry. What do they know about this place?" "Nothing. Get a place in town." "This is my new wife, Kate. Remember, I took a few days off to get married. Kate, this is Wayne Foster, the head ranger." "Congratulations." Foster stared deep into the forest. Tiny lights flickered, then vanished. He grunted, stumbled back into the truck, and drove off. "Should he be driving?" Kate asked. "Probably not," Mike said. "Drinks a case of 24 every day." "How can he drink that much liquid, let alone beer?" Kate asked. Mike shrugged. The next day, Mike and Kate drove to town to get supplies. On the way back to the park, they stopped for lunch at a log house with a long veranda, the kind of establishment with a home cooking restaurant and a souvenir shop stuffed with moccasins, tiny birch bark teepees, wampum, gaudy feather headdresses, silver turquoise, and plastic Indian dolls made in Japan or Taiwan. Kate looked around the gift shop. She honed in on some small baskets brimming with tiny stone stars, flowers, shells, teardrops, and leaves. Someone had bored a hole in the top of each of the trinkets for attachment to a necklace or a bracelet. "They're made by the tears of the Golud Mossisake, the little people," the Cree woman behind the counter said, "crying over the death of the forests." "That's a tall tale. I see those fossils and formations every day at the park. I hope that's not where these came from," Mike said. The woman gave him an unperturbed look. "They're lovely." Kate picked up a pale yellow flower. "You can string some together to make a necklace." The woman glanced at a souvenir beading kit. "Wear it and the fairies will know you're a friend." Kate felt Mike's scorn. In the fall, he would start a Master of Science degree in geology with a full scholarship and tended to look down on her humble arts program. She felt relieved that when Mike and she had exchanged lovers' confidences, she had never mentioned her mother seeing fairies in the heather of her native Scotland. An ignorant immigrant story, a fanciful old wives' tale, a belief that would have withered under Mike's scientific contempt. She felt an overwhelming urge to clap her hands and shout, "I believe in fairies!" Instead, Kate grabbed one of the beading kits and picked out fossil shells, flowers, leaves, and teardrops. "When you see Golud Mossisake, it's your attitude that leads to a good or a bad time with them." The woman rang up Kate's purchase. "If you're a person of narrow upbringing," she shot a glance at Mike, "their appearance creates fear and apprehension that can cause a negative outcome. But if you're a positive, open-minded person, the results can be rewarded." Mike snorted. Kate gave the woman an apologetic smile. Each morning, Mike helped Ray, one of the park rangers, supervise the junior rangers. Young men, most of them summer students, who lived in the bunkhouses down by the small lake marked out with a line of orange buoys for swimming. They built log bridges and fixed the trails. At noon, Mike returned home for a fried bologna sandwich and their tumbled nap. In the afternoon, Mike collected and mapped the fossils exposed by the rushing river. It never occurred to Kate to join him, though she went on the organized nature walks and took in movie night. Freed from the responsibility of a summer job, Kate read dog-eared fiction gathered from the small public library where Mike put in his interlibrary loan requests for scientific papers. She learned how to clean house. One afternoon, a plague of gauzy, fairy-winged flies flew into the office and promptly died all over the floor. As Kate swept them, they crumbled to dust and stuck to the linoleum. She wondered with a pang of guilt how her mother could work all day in an office, yet keep the family home immaculate without cleaning help. Kate decided to forget about the office floor. She took out the beading kit and the stones, made a fairy stone necklace, and placed it around her neck. Kate dug around in the cupboard for the colander and set out to pick raspberries. Kate noted the paint smear on a tree that marked the beginning of the blue trail and wandered into the forest. Sun dappled down through quivering birch. Huge prehistoric ferns up to her shoulders drooped along the path. The air felt cooler in the trees. An invisible breeze rustled the coined leaves of the aspens, the faint scent of leaf mulch and growing. A brook bubbled through moss. Spindly baby poplars and smaller ferns crowded the banks. A butterfly flitted over the orange butter and eggs flowers. Papery Indian pipe clustered at the base of the trees. Cicadas buzzed. Kate crouched down, looking for the rare lady slippers. She lifted a fern and started when something brown skittered away. She raised another fern and iridescent wings flashed for an instant. Probably the flies that died on her floor. Seemed healthy enough out here. Bulbous ruby and white lady slippers bobbed from long thin stems. She gazed at them for a while and then walked along until the trail petered out at a rocky hillock with a thick patch of raspberries at its base. Kate picked fruit at the outer edge of the canes and then moved inwards, trying to avoid the thorns scratching her bare arms and legs. The hot sun warmed her skin, tanning instead of burning. Thank goodness she was a black Scot, with long, straight, dark hair, brown eyes, and olive skin. For once she felt no envy towards her curly, red-haired sisters. A blue jay cawed. The insects fell silent. The canes ahead of her shook. Brown flashed through the leaves. Last week, Mike had seen a young black bear splashing in the river below the beaver dam. They loved raspberries. Had she walked between a mother and her cub? Kate froze. "Go away! Go away!" she shouted. The canes clattered on one side, then behind her. Invisible stones rattled as if in a jar. A high, wild shriek pierced the heat. The sound of a rabbit caught by a fox. Or a bear. Death, dead silence. The cicadas resumed their buzz. Kate crept forward. A careless path trampled down the canes ahead of her, a sign that a bear lumbered nearby. She clutched the colander and ran, back to the safety of the road and the house. All the washing Kate had foolishly left on the line overnight, every towel, Mike's uniform, the jeans, two long-sleeved t-shirts, hung braided in the morning dew. She cursed, a bad habit picked up from Mike. Who'd done this? Perhaps local teenagers out for a night of fun in the park. The junior rangers rattled by in their ancient school bus and sent leering shouts her way. Maybe they had done this as a prank. She ignored them. Not for her the jumping up and down in wild waves of her younger sisters. Besides, she was a married woman now. It sounded good. Foster stood at the end of the small scrub of a yard. He patted his shirt pocket, pulled out a pack of cigarettes, tapped one out and stuck it in the side of his mouth. His hands shook a little as he snapped a lighter several times, then held it up to his cigarette. The smoke curled up past swollen, hungover eyes. "You got trouble," he said. "Go Ludmus Zigzag did that. You should find a place in town. They'll make your life hell." Too shy and leery to speak, Kate worked at untangling the clothes and willed him to go away. Who needed his sly joke? He snorted, dropped the half-smoked cigarette into the scrub of grass by the back door, gave it a quick, useless tap of his foot and walked away, round the building to the entrance hut. Kate rushed to the smoldering smoke and tramped it out, annoyed at his carelessness. All those signs about no open fires. Mike appeared at the back door and eyed the clothes. According to our head rangers, The theory of evolution is imaginary, but fairies aren't. He snorted. Foster shouldn't stumble around in the dark after his visits to the Legion. Kate shrugged and picked up the full basket. I shouldn't have left the clothes out at night. I'll have to go into town and do the wash again. You were busy, Mike grinned at her. Kate blushed. Kate took the head ranger's words to heart. A person could believe in evolution and fairies. She felt a shiver of excitement as she remembered the dark pictures in childhood books sent from relatives in Scotland or checked out from the public library. Such things seemed more a part of grim and medieval Europe than the New World stories of the Wendigo, the Thunderbird, or Manitou. In the evening, Kate put a bowl of sugared, sopped bread outside the back door to appease the little people, as her mother had done during her childhood in the Highlands. What's with this? Mike asked, noticing the spilled bowl on their return from nature movie night. Trying to attract skunks? It looks like at least one had a bite. Kate reddened the skunks. They would lap up the sop. Bad enough smelling their stink on the night breeze. Imagine stepping on one while taking out the garbage. I don't know how that got there, she muttered, picking up the bowl and dumping the contents in the garbage. The undergrowth at the edge of the yard shivered in the dark, and Kate knew she had disappointed the fairies. When Mike went to the washroom, she spooned the best bits of the sop out of the trash and added a few raspberries. She slipped outside and placed the bowl on the bird feeder. The high pole and the baffle would keep any skunks or squirrels away, but the fairies, like birds, could have easy access. Kate planned on moving the sop early in the morning, before Mike noticed and mocked. A chorus of chirps woke Kate. She opened her eyes to night. The moon shone through the window. She crept out of bed, slipped into the kitchen, and stood near the window. Creatures as small as hummingbirds flitted around the feeder, wings iridescent in the moonlight. The fairies. Kate clutched her arms across herself. She was actually seeing fairies. Unlike the storybook pictures, they were brown and squat under their shimmering wings, with odd, pointed, ugly faces like naked bats with human arms and legs. They dunked their stumpy, sharp-nailed hands into the sop and stuffed it into mouths full of tiny, pointed teeth. Those waiting a turn dipped and dived and chirped. On the ground below, two fairies gathered around the stub of the head ranger's cigarette. They pulled off the paper and divided up the tobacco. Fire sparked between them. The two fairies cupped a round glow in their hands and breathed in the smoke. The other creatures stopped their feast and fluttered down around the burning tobacco. Each inhaled, then grasped a bit and held up a tiny brand. Miniature Andean flutes appeared in the hands of several who had not taken the tobacco. They played high shrill notes that spoke of faraway times before the white man. The fairies flickered into a circle round the bird feeder and danced round and round the pole, a bright circle. Kate wondered if they knew she watched and if they thanked her. A crack, like a car backfire, blasted through the yard. The bird feeder tipped and fell, cut in two. The lights snuffed out. The fairies vanished. What the hell? Mike said, suddenly beside her. What's going on? I don't know, Kate said as another bang shattered the feeder on the ground. Wood, sop, and plates scattered everywhere. I'll fix you all, Foster appeared in the yard. The rifle in his arm swayed in time to his drunken gait. I'll fix you all. Mike stormed out the door without a thought to the danger. He ran up to Foster and grabbed the gun from his hands. What are you doing? Mike shouted. You could have shot through our window and killed us. It's all your wife's fault. Foster stared at him. What about my wife? Mike said. She attracts them. She brings them here, Foster said. You stay away from my wife. You don't got the sense to control her. Trouble's coming, you'll see. Get out of here or I'll call the cops. Give me my rifle. No, Mike said. Foster shrugged. He spun around, wobbling like a child's top, and stumbled off down the road towards the campsite. Mike slammed into the house. He been bothering you? Mike asked. No, Kate said. He only ever came around here once, yesterday morning when my laundry was all tangled up. Mike shook his head. The man's a menace. I need a cup of tea. Kate put the kettle on the stove. Mike noticed the rifle in his hands and placed it carefully in the corner beside the back door. He thudded down in a kitchen chair, his face pinched and drained, as the danger of his actions hit him. Tomorrow I'm reporting him to the ministry. Kate needed tea biscuits to go with the canned stew for lunch. She popped them in the tiny oven. A check after 15 minutes found a bunch of soggy lumps. No heat. She dumped the biscuits into the cast iron fry pan. Within minutes, burned dough smoked the kitchen. Kate dumped the mess into the garbage. A fresh pile of dead flies sifted under the kitchen door and over the floor. Her superstitions linked this bad luck to the aborted bowl of sop. 1 o'clock passed. Normally, Mike came early for lunch at 11:30. He wouldn't be late today. He planned to phone the ministry. Kate's mind ran away with her. A tree fell on him. The bear had attacked him. Did Mike know how to play dead, or was he supposed to run away? The junior rangers were a tough lot. At least one of them was here on probation from the cities down south to get a taste of honest work in the wilderness. They had hacked Mike to death with the shovels. She was sure of it. Perhaps he had stopped at the maintenance barn to discuss the pending call to the big bosses with Foster. The thought of the possible fight deepened her foreboding. She steeled herself and walked over to the shed. Foster's pickup was parked in the gravel yard. The barn smelled of dying grass, oil, and decay. Silent dust motes dangled in a shaft of light. Dark shadows engulfed the trash truck and the lawnmower. House flies buzzed. No Mike. No Rangers, Park, or Junior. Foster hunched behind his desk in a cluttered back office, a lit cigarette dangling from his lips. Kate's voice sounded sharp in her ears. Mike hasn't come home for lunch. Her question popped out of her mouth without a thought. Did you have a fight about his reporting you to the ministry? Foster stared at her. Without a word, he made her feel that it was all her fault. He levered himself up from his desk, thumped past her, and jumped in his pickup. The vehicle spewed gravel as it roared away. The road dust settled. The cicadas buzzed. Kate stood alone inside the empty barn. Had the head rangers gone to find Mike? Had he left for the Legion? Slow anger grew. She straightened her shoulders and stomped out of the shed. On the far side of the gravel yard, afternoon light shimmered around the ferns at the edge of the forest. "Will you help me find Mike?" Kate asked the air. A consciousness in the woods invited her in. Kate walked straight into the bush. A crow cawed and a blue jay scolded. After stumbling through the undergrowth, a flash on a tree showed her the red trail. She knew that trail needed new logs for the corduroy road that kept people's feet from the mud after they finished wandering along the boardwalk through the swamp. The work could have taken longer than expected. At first, sunlight dappled the trail in the undergrowth, and then the day darkened. A squirrel chattered in the trees. Thunder echoed far and away. Kate thought she could be safe from lightning as long as she was hidden deep in the forest, not on a hill. Nothing to be done. She was too far from home to get back in time. Perhaps it would blow over. She noticed the aspen leaves had not turned over as they should at the approach of rain. Odd. The rustling jingle seemed a whispering jangle. The darkened trees and bushes crowded the trail. An oppressive silence engulfed the woods. Swamp cedar and waterlogged dead trees loomed around the boardwalk. Kate swatted at a sudden cloud of mosquitoes that buzzed in her ears. Black flies landed on her skin, then darted away at the smell of her repellent. She plodded over the rotting boardwalk. The barren branches creaked with secrets. The walkway ended in an abandoned work site. Bright new logs rested beside the half-buried corduroy road. A rough excavation in the trail had partially filled with oily water. Old logs rotted where someone had dragged them from among the trees. Shovels and axes lay where their owners had dropped them. A hidden person crashed through the undergrowth. Twigs snapped underfoot. "Mike? Guys?" Kate called. The sound stopped. The deep forest absorbed her calls. A crow caw startled her. The person crunched beside the overgrown trail beyond the work site. The bushes swayed. A black bear lumbered out onto the path. Kate screamed and ran back down the boardwalk. A plank cracked and broke under her foot. Her leg fell through, down into the still, oily black water below. Kate cried out. She turned and saw the bear sauntering down the path, staring at her. She yanked her foot up from the sucking mud, losing her running shoe, and scraped her leg through the ragged splinters of the break. Kate ran off kilter. Sock, shoe, sock, shoe. The bear snorted from the work site. She hopped, wrenched off her runner, and threw it behind her. It thumped uselessly on the planks. She raced off the boardwalk and back the way she had come, heedless of foot-bruising rocks and twigs. The gloom deepened. The thunder sounded closer. Kate slowed down, unable to keep up the pace. She glanced back. No bear. She stopped with her hands on her knees, gasped to catch her breath, and listened. The silent air, humid air, bore down, yet the leaves of the aspen remained unturned. Something more than a bear was wrong. Ahead the trail forked, the blue trail one way, the red the other. She jogged down the blue. The trail narrowed, invaded by thick undergrowth. Human shouts cut the silence. Kate ran towards them. Nettles and thorns grabbed at her. Branches flicked in her way. She pushed through to the brook glade and stumbled to a stop. Ray and sweating junior rangers stood on the path, scythes dangling at their sides. Devastation surrounded them. They had hacked down the giant ferns, tossing them into the bush, and trampled the wildfires and Indian pipe. Mike crouched on the ground and gathered something. "You heard me. Get back to work. I want this trail cleared." An angry red-faced Foster stood on the other side of the stream. "The bear," Kate said. "Least of my worries," Mike rose, tears steeped in his eyes. Crushed ruby lady slippers filled his cupped hands. "You bastard," he said to Foster. "You're fired," Foster shouted. "No one crosses me." Dry thunder cracked overhead. Everyone winced. The forest darkened into night. A whirring, chirping black cloud erupted from the bush. Tiny creatures with translucent wings overwhelmed them. The junior rangers screamed and dropped their scythes. Mike dropped the orchids and whacked at the storm. "I rule here, Gwo Ludmosis Egg," Foster punched at the horde. "You chased away my stupid wife and kids, but you won't defeat me." The creatures bit and scratched, skin bloodied, clothes tore, except for Kate. She existed in an invisible bubble, untouched by the whirlwind. "Run for the bus," Mike yelled. They dashed down the trail to the road, the swarm buzzing, and charged up to the bus. The creatures followed, attacking and chewing. Ray jumped in the driver's seat, pulled a lever, and slammed the door close. "Shut the windows," Mike said. The junior rangers smashed them up and squashed the invaders. They whacked until the attackers inside the bus were dead. The horde slamming against the outside of the windows made a gloom of the interior. Ray turned on the ignition. The bus shrieked and died. "They're in the engine. We're not going anywhere," Mike said. "Where's the head ranger?" one of the boys asked. "Don't know and don't care." Mike sat down on the aisle seat beside Kate and put a protective arm around her. "He's not in here," Ray said. Kate leaned over and picked up a dead fairy from the floor. It looked so small and vulnerable, its wings crushed and its arms and legs curled up like a dead spider. The live ones, ugly faces distorted in grins of hate, beat their fist and kicked against the windows. "What are they?" The junior ranger used a sleeve to wipe the blood dripping down his forehead. "Golud must sisake. Fairies, little people," Kate said. "Why aren't they going after you?" Mike asked. "I don't know." Then she did. Kate placed the dead creature on the seat beside her, undid her necklace, and poured the stones into her hand. "Destroying their glade was Foster's idea, right?" The rangers nodded. She walked down the bus aisle. "Take one of these, they're fairy tears, and show you don't normally destroy the forest." Each took one. Kate handed the second last to Mike, to whom she could now tell anything he would believe. "Hold your stones up to the windows." Kate had no idea if her idea would work. They held them up. The roar lessened. Silence as the fairies dropped away. Ray tried the engine again. It refused to turn over. Packed with bodies. He shook his head. "Look," one of the junior rangers said. A thick swarm dripped over Foster's pickup. A rhythmic booming rose from the truck. The fairies threw themselves against the cab. Crashing glass and a muffled scream. The cab door swung open and a ball of man and creatures rolled out. The ball elongated and ran into the woods. The rest of the swarm followed. The people in the bus sat in silence. Kate stared at the forest. The aspen leaves had turned. Single drops of rain pelted the dry road. She reached out to the dead fairy. Like the flies she had swept in the office, it crumbled to dust at her touch. The junior rangers exclaimed as the same thing happened throughout the bus. "Try the engine again," Mike said. "Dead, full of grit," Ray said. Rain pelted against the bus and sheeted down the windshield. Mike pulled out the first aid kit from under the dash. Kate applied antiseptic and bandages. No one spoke of Foster. The storm ended. The sun came out. Birds and cicadas called and whirred. Drops sparkled in the trees. A shining new Winnebago roared down the road and halted by the bus. The elderly man inside rolled down his window before anyone could call out a warning. "This way to the campground," he called out. His wife peered at them from the passenger seat. No whirring swarm appeared. The day slumbered. Ray slowly rolled down his window. "Yeah." "Rope broken down?" Yeah. Hop in. I'll give you a ride to the office. They all scrambled out and into the snug confines of the Winnebago. You boys look like you've had a hard day of it, the elderly woman said. The junior rangers nodded. The old man executed a surprisingly smart turn with the Winnebago. The survivors stared at the abandoned truck as they drove past and away. Frost tinged the air. The park closed for the season. Kate pulled the clean clothes off the line and folded them right into the suitcase open on the ground. Mike and she were heading south to the university that waited with Mike's postgraduate scholarship. The junior ranger's bus groaned by, and she waved at the boys inside, who waved back. Mike crossed the yard and put an arm around her waist. That's them off to the bus terminal and home. He touched the rawhide necklace of stone shells around his throat. Won't have to wear the fairy stones anymore. Any news on Foster? The search parties had wound down a week before. None of the survivors had dared to tell the truth. Who would believe them? They let Foster's alcoholism and the abandoned truck speak. They think hunters will someday find his body. I got the report back on the fairy dust. And? Dirt from the park with a smattering of insect. The soil's unique, but not unusual. Kate glanced over at the forest. Shadows shimmered from within the ferns and undergrowth. Tiny lights sparked for an instant. She lifted a hand and motioned goodbye.
That story sounds even better the second time I heard it.
Yeah, it's a really good story, isn't it?
Yeah.
I was surprised how good it was.
I couldn't help but cringe at the fried bologna sandwich and
Elvis hair burns. 70s?
Elvis sideburns. Yeah. Yeah.
It was the 70s.
And it makes you wonder, it's like the fairies didn't make his family leave him. It was probably the
his alcoholism, you think? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So. Wow.
Anyway, well, I'm glad you enjoyed it, and I hope that the listeners enjoy it as well. It's mm-hmm. our first try, so...
Yeah, we're going to keep improving the quality of our podcasts, and we will have another one up next week.
Starting the novel, the first book of the Tales of Tanshi, which is a vampire novels that I have written. We will give you a little few more details on that later in the week. We'll put up what it's all about.
Excellent. I'm excited for it. I've been a fan of my mom's writing, and this isn't just because I'm related to her. It actually is good.
Yeah.
And
thank you.
Because I've read a number of books, and I'm actually very picky as to what holds my interest. If something doesn't hold my interest, I'll stop reading it like halfway through. And her stuff is very good. It's like action packed, and it holds your interest. It hooks you really well.
The vampire novels will be definitely action-packed because, hello, they're vampires.
It'll definitely be something to bite into.
Oh, God, that's terrible.
I couldn't help it.
Okay. Oh, that's going to cause a bit of bad blood between the family. Well, we'll see you next week.
And as always, everybody, y'all take care and good health.
And keep well.
Bye-bye now.